week a show was canceled after only a couple of episodes, the making of the one. Not the case with this show. Storm Large of Portland has already achieved the level of rock stardom that comes when you're the lead singer of a club-packing touring band. But now, she's hoping to achieve a much higher profile by winning the CBS reality... Let's give it for CBS.
Yeah, man.
The CBS reality series Rockstar Supernova. Anyone in the Northwest who has seen Storm... What's the name of the band?
Storm and the Balls.
I'm just checking.
Right. I mean, basketballs, footballs, baseballs, footballs.
Anyone who's seen them play know what kind of uniqueness and energy she brings to her vocal performances. And now, thanks to Rockstar, the lady who spent 4 years singing on Wednesday nights at Dante's is now getting her big break singing in front of millions. Storm Large, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm awake.
That's something, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's great. We had a big party at the house last night, so I actually haven't gone to bed yet, so I'm happy to be here.
Oh, really? It was an all-night party?
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
All right. And lemonade and cookies and things like that were served?
Cookies and ginip-ganop, and there was a wild game of Monopoly going on in the corner, but I didn't want to go over there and become, you know, tainted by that.
Got it. Well, Storm, that was going to be my first question was, you know, you work hard. You obviously, you sound fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
And that's you have a real voice. But all of a sudden, I've seen it happen. You get caught up in the Hollywood and the show business, and the next thing you know, people are sort of stressing out your time, and you got a party here, you got to go there, you got to make all the, make all the right contacts and stuff, and it can wear you down.
Yes.
Are you guarding against that?
Yes, I am, actually. You have to use your energy really wisely and know when to stay up and when to go to bed and when to drink and when to have water. And, know where your energy is needed, what's important, and always my health always comes first.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be able to bring... 1,000% at the drop of a hat at any time. So you need sleep, food, and clean water and fresh air. Pretty basic stuff, but so far I haven't been pushed and pulled to the point where I've been unable to perform or keep up.
Good. Let me give you a quick Hollywood quiz, see how you're doing there. Mel Gibson offers you a ride home late at night on the Pacific Coast Highway. What do you do? What do you say?
You know something? I don't know what's going on in the world at all. We're kind of sequestered from news.
Okay.
So I'm assuming from that question Mel Gibson drove off a cliff or something.
Almost. Well, yeah. His car stopped short, but his career is going off.
He drove off a verbal clip. The correct answer is no. Thinking, Mel, I'll walk. I'll walk down the middle of the road on the center stripe. That'll be safer. Good. And stay away from Lindsay Lohan too. She's got problems.
I imagine she's quite a handful. Yes.
Hey Storm, you're doing the stuff it takes to keep your voice intact and your appearance like it should be to be on stage. But you're working for a band who's comprised of Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, and Metallica. Are they taking common sense as a strike against you in looking for the rock star?
No, absolutely not. I mean, yeah, they party, and Tommy's got such a huge reputation for being a monster partier, and he very well may be, but he takes this very seriously. This is his job. Excuse me. This is a dream job for him right now, and he respects us all, and so he wants to bring his respect and his professionalism to this show, and the fact that a lot of us can party, but we take our instruments very seriously and our positions here very seriously. You know, that is not a strike against us at all, no.
You got a lot of fans of your band, The Balls. If you win this thing and become the singer for Supernova, is it bye-bye Balls?
No, absolutely not. The Balls, if you've seen them, we're the kind of band that you can... I mean, I'll be able to sing with those guys when I'm 50. You know, it's one of those things. It's such a fun show, and it's always changing, and it just kind of keeps up with itself, and it's really easy for a lot of us, and for my band and I, and we're just friends. It's not even, I mean, it's work, but it's fun work, and we love hanging out, and we love working together. So I definitely will do my balls again, for sure.
Now, the show picks what songs you get to sing. I know you sang Pinball Wizard kind of by default. It was all that was left on the board.
Yeah.
If you could sing anything with this band for this audience, what would you sing?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah?
Yep. Bohemian Rhapsody. Just stand there and do, like, probably the most difficult pop song ever written. And just do that. And so, I mean, it might not win me any points with Supernova. I know they're Queen fans, but just to sort of flex and say, look, this is what I can do. This is pretty much the scope of my ability in terms of performance, in terms of vocal stretch. And this is one of my favorite songs ever. And either that or one of my own songs, probably Ladylike.
Storm Large. Is Large your real name?
Yes, it is, actually.
Where does that come from?
England. But I went to, that's the name. The name comes from England. But I went to college in New York City, and there was a girl there named Maggie Large I saw on the student roster.
Mm-hmm.
And when I met her, she was from the West Indies, and she was a black girl from the West Indies. Her last name was Large, and I was like, oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah,
my grandparents got some splaining to do.
My name's Bryant, and, you know, there's that Kobe guy.
Yeah. It's kind of cool to have a, you know, some guys enjoy having a, I'm not sure if it's a guy or a girl name. You have not sure if it's black or white. How are you with Tommy Lee? Tommy Lee said he'd like to see more of Storm and less of your clothing. You looked at him and you said six letters, Google.
Yep.
Did Google's check clear?
Well, actually, it's funny because the show is sponsored by MSN, and I thought I was going to get in a lot of trouble for what I said, but they liked it, they kept it, and every website that had anything to do with me crashed instantly.
any idea when those pictures are going back up on the web? Because you can't link to anything now off the Balls website.
Really?
Yep.
They are out there. And they're not nasty. They're just, you know, I used to model, and it's nothing gynecological or nothing, you know. You
can't, she's just lovely.
You can't see in me, let's just say.
Oh, God,
but they're beautiful, tastefully done, and Tommy Lee will get his wish, but not in person, I suspect.
Well, you know, if I decide that I'm going to, you know, wear something more provocative, that's on my time, and that's because I decide... You know, I'm not here to win a swimsuit contest. I'm here to win a singing and performing contest. And Tommy says that, and he, you know, he's doing it because he's being cute and he's being funny and he's on television. And but that's what he does. He still respects me and all the girls on this show, even though he says sexual things.
That's just the way he's wired.
Well, that's what we want from Tommy, so he's giving us what we want.
Exactly.
Storm, have any of the guys there given you some actually useful performing musical advice that really changed your performance in any way?
Actually, yes. I'm not allowed to tell you what I'm performing this week, but they wanted to see a bit of a more vulnerable Storm. They... You know, last week Dave Navarro said, he's like, God, you're impenetrable. You're like a superhero. I'd like to see you more pulled back and like to see the softer side, you know. And my knee-jerk reaction is, well, screw you.
That's not
what
he wanted.
But I thought about it, and I based my song choice on just that. And you'll see this week. It was really, really difficult for me to do that, but it, you know, anyone who's seen the Balls knows that I could sing in any style, and I can do that. But it was hard for me to be in a rock and roll contest in front of all my rock and roll brothers and sisters in the competition, whom, by the way, I adore every single one of them. It was really difficult to be that stripped back and not subdued. You'll see. It's It's very vulnerable. They got what they wanted.
Vulnerable. Search Google vulnerable. You'll see her this weekend.
Rip back.
Or check it on the MSN
don't do
search,
a
though.
Vulnerable / bondage swing. You don't want to see those.
Storm Large. Storm.
Yes.
You are going to win.
I hope so.
Well, at the very least, I want to make my Portland proud. They made it very clear to me when I left that they were making a huge sacrifice by letting me go to L.A. And I'm having a great time. This is a great experience, but I am very homesick. And what am I hearing in the background?
Is that her in the background, Eric? All right, it's sort of a train wreck, but that's Eric is playing a little of you in the background. Here we go.
Oh my goodness, that's a live cut, isn't it?
Yep. It's an old live cut, yes.
Oh.
I don't think she likes it.
Don't worry, darling. Sound great.
You are so cute.
Storm Large in Los Angeles. Good luck, Storm.
Thank you so much. And you guys give my love to the Northwest. I miss the rain.
We have a couple of Dear Flabby letters. This one's way out of my... out of my realm. I don't know what to do about this first one. The second one I could maybe help with a little bit. So we'll start with the more difficult one from a youngster, interestingly named Kristen.
Really?
Dear Flabby, and if you have anything you'd like us to run by us or the audience, all you have to do is email dearflabby@bobrivers.com. Dear Flabby, last night was the first time ever I slept over my boyfriend's apartment. And now I'm concerned.
Oh, I can see where this is going.
He sleeps with a stuffed pony named Charlie.
you
Never
saw
mind.
That, you saw that coming,
I had
didn't
no
you?
Idea.
You saw that one coming there, Miss Worldly, Miss Experience?
When I said, oh, a pony, he said, his name is Charlie. Do you get it?
Oh, my God.
And I said, no. And then he said, Charlie Horse, get it?
Blah, ha, ha,
oh, man.
And even when we were in bed, he still slept with Charlie. He says he's had Charlie since he was a kid.
Huh.
Is this a danger sign? Is there anyone else who's found someone sleeping with something they've had since they were a kid? Can they be normal? Or does it mean they'll never grow up? Should I dump him?
Oh, come on. For a horse?
Well.
Come on. If he's not carrying Charlie Horse everywhere he goes, like dragging it by its ear and sucking his thumb, then what's the big deal?
I don't know. This isn't that far from carrying Charlie Horse around town.
Yeah, a grown guy with a stuffed animal, I say, is a problem. Yeah.
Why is it a problem if it doesn't affect...
Because most of us are too homophobic to do that. And you want your guy to be at least a certain amount of homophobic, don't you?
Yeah. You do.
You do.
A grown guy that will admit to you that he sleeps with a stuffed animal the first time you visit, that's a little odd.
Right, he should hide it until after.
Charlie, I know you don't like the closet, but it's just for tonight, big fella. It's just for tonight. I promise I'll open a little slat in the closet door for you. Yeah. I'll keep water and air in there.
You could break that news gently to her, I think.
I say move on to someone who's only got pillows on their bed. What do you say?
Well, yeah. It's troubling that a grown man has a stuffed animal from his childhood that he needs to feel comfortable in bed. That's a little troubling. There were some issues here. I think it's good that Charlie doesn't have a blinking red light on it, and you have to take a moment during the middle of the night to change Charlie's tape. That's a good sign he's not recording the whole event, and you know the Charlie cam. Yes, I mean, why else do you have a stuffed animal in your room if not to have surveillance?
So you wake up the next morning, hey, I'm on the internet.
Yeah.
1-800-252-1025. Is a stuffed animal in a guy's bed a sign of anything? 1-800-252-1025. No, girl, I think it would be cute. It would be endearing. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, look at that. So she's got the Mr. Monkey
I'm
man.
Probably That's only great. Her second or third boyfriend. This is fantastic. 1-800-252-1025. Alex.
Hello?
Hi, Alex.
Hi. I'm calling because I sleep with a Care Bear on my bed.
With a Care Bear?
Dude, a Care Bear?
Yeah. I mean, I'm 21, and I have a stable girlfriend, and, yeah, walked in, saw a Care Bear on my bed, and I just think it's funny, because I have it because when I was born, I came home to a Care Bear in my crib, and I've just and I always had a Care Bear in my bed since.
He's the guy. He's the letter writer,
you're
basically.
The man. Alex, you're the man. And way to step up to admit this, too, buddy. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, hey, thanks. I just think it's funny. I mean, it's no big deal.
Okay.
To me, at least.
Oh, it's a big deal.
Is it?
Well, John will tell you. John thinks it's a little fruity. Go ahead, John. Alex has a Care Bear. What do you say?
Well, Bob, first thing I'd want to know if there was any strategically placed holes in the bear.
Hey. You be nice.
And I think it's just a little on the funny side to be. I can see a woman having something soft and cuddly, but other than a. I don't know. It's a little far-fetched for me.
Alex?
I say dump him.
Well, I don't snuggle with it or anything. It's just kind of in the bed there. I mean, I don't have a nightlight or anything, too. It's just it's a nice, cute little Care Bear. It shows my sensitive side to the ladies, you know?
Yeah, a lot of ladies have met him, have they?
Of course.
Yeah. Are they impressed?
Might show a little more on the sensitive side.
Sounds like he's getting ladies to come home.
John keeps his sensitive side covered up.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just that kind of guy, though, because I'm also a massage therapist and everything like that. So, you know,
right.
I bring him home, give him a massage, show him the Care Bear.
Closes the deal, does it?
It can work. Thank you. 1-800-252-1025. He was a sensitive guy.
Yeah, he was.
But it sounded like sensitive but strong, if you know what I mean.
Metro sensitive.
1-800-252-1025. Candy.
Sandy.
What is it again?
Sandy.
Sandy. Go ahead, Sandy.
I just wanted to make a comment about the pony in the bed. Mm. I think that it's a sign of insecurity, and I think there's some issues there. Not normal for a grown man to have a pony in his bed. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Is it a sign of insecurity or a sign of faithfulness? You know, after seeing Toy Story and seeing those toys that go to the land of forgotten toys, here's a guy who has been faithful to his favorite toy for all these years.
Well, I don't know. If I were his girlfriend, I would think that he was insecure about something. There's something missing in his life. It's not normal. He's a grown man and...
Let's say he is your boyfriend, Candy, or Sandy. Let's say he is your boyfriend. How do you fix this?
She burns it.
I would probably put it in a corner somewhere and eventually get rid of it.
Here is Desma. Desma, hello.
Yeah, I'm working out on the stair stepper when I listen to you guys, so if I sound out of breath, that's why.
It's all right, Desma. We love that. We love people all hot and bot and sweaty when they call. Go ahead.
Yes, we have a family member, and they're 24, and they still take their baby blanket to bed with them.
Blankie?
Yes, uh-huh. And they're an all right person. As long as it's not something dark and weird, and it's definitely a harmless thing. And as far as it being normal or abnormal, what's normal? After all,
that.
You know, I've been in the loony bin 3 times, so who am I
to
point at?
And now you're on the stair stepper.
Now, is this your son that does this? Who's the family member?
Yeah, it's a family member, an in-law,
okay.
Yeah, so I want to be careful because I'm not, you know, giving out this information vindictive or anything.
Yeah.
I love the person.
All right, and where are you calling from?
I'm Woodland.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Right, bye.
Well, welcome back.
Carrie, hello.
Hi, good morning, guys.
All right, a guy with a blankie or a guy with a stuffed animal, what do you think?
Charlie.
Well, now, I personally don't, but I would hesitate about being too quick to judge. I was just thinking to myself that, you know, maybe there's a little bit of history behind it. You know, maybe it's... maybe it was given by a family member who maybe isn't with us anymore, and maybe the guy's just kind of sentimental about it. And so I don't know. You got to give the guy a chance, maybe hear a little bit of the history behind it.
In other words, come back for a few more nights and see if anything weird happens with the end.
Well, you never know.
Linda, you're next. Go.
Hi. I'm calling about my husband. That when I first met him, he used to drive around with this penguin.
A penguin.
Yeah, because he got lonely. He would go on long trips across the country, and he had this stuffed penguin. And, well, since I've met him, the penguin is gone. I told him I thought it was weird, and I wasn't especially comfortable with it, and that was that. He was okay with it.
So you began...
It wasn't one that he had since childhood either. So
you began controlling his life and rearranging his things from the moment you met him.
Absolutely, it's my place as a woman.
Way to set the tone, babe.
Yeah. Oh, you and my wife would get along just fine. And are you one of those people who arranges all the cabinets and everything, and it has to go? Everything has to go where you put it?
No, I'm not like that at all. No.
Okay, then that's where the similarity ends.
I just thought the animal was weird.
Why?
You know, it's weird.
Why?
For the same reason as the other callers, I think it's just a little bit too cuddly for a man, and I didn't find it attractive, an attractive quality in my husband that he drove around with a stuffed animal.
What kind of animal?
Why would he need that kind of attachment?
You haven't mentioned what kind of animal.
It was a penguin.
Oh, a penguin. Oh, that's right. Yeah, she did mention that. Okay. So men are supposed to be rugged.
Not necessarily, but men are supposed to mature.
Did you make his penguin disappear, or did you make him deal with it?
Who shot the penguin?
The penguin is in the closet, actually.
Uh-oh.
Oh, he still has it.
He won't let me get completely rid of it, but it's in the closet with a whole bunch of other games and stuff that we're saving for grandchildren.
The closet is quite a metaphor there, Linda.
It really is.
Should it not work out with you?
As long as you keep that stuffed in the closet, it's okay with me. Linda, thank you. 1-800-252-1025. Quick, anybody else on the stuffed animal? Amanda, hello.
Well, speaking of in the closet, the guy's gay. He's gay. A stuffed pony in the bed. He's a massage therapist. And I'm sorry, but anyone who uses the phrase the lady...
The massage therapist
hold on.
The guy who called to defend him.
Yeah, the care bear in his bed.
Yeah, and you're right. We may think he was maybe at least thinking
about it. But he said he wasn't gay. He said he used it to woo women. He massages them.
Yeah, sure, he said that. But anyone who uses the phrase the lady isn't getting any.
Not from Amanda. Thank you, Amanda. Okay.
I might sneak into the guy's room with one of those blue lights they use on CSI and check Charlie Horse for too much loving, if you know what I'm saying. And if it's clean, then you're cool.
You're strangely silent on this.
Well, I'm trying to... that's a nice whinny. I'm trying to... how long have they been dating? I forget said.
Well, it's the first night I've ever been in my boyfriend's apartment, so at least a half hour.
Only 22. You don't need, like, years of, you know, going steady.
We're in the apartment now.
Yeah, I mean, if he's perfect in every other way, it would be kind of silly to let that ruin it. But if you're kind of... For me, if I walked into his bedroom and saw that, it would kind of creep me out just a little bit.
It would.
Yeah. If he wasn't, you know, absolutely awesome in every other way.
So he can overcome the stuffed bear. What would it take? A triathlon trophy?
You know what ruins it for me is the fact that it's a horse and the fact that he named it Charlie.
Why?
Because if it were like a ratty old bear that he just, you know...
Mr. Wibbles?
Yeah.
Or something like that, that'd be okay?
But the whole pun thing, like, I don't know, it's just
kind of
ruins it.
Charlie a horse.
Because now he's not funny.
Annetta. Hello, Annetta.
Hello.
You're on.
Okay. I think that it's completely fine for a man to have a stuffed animal in his bed.
You take any man with a stuffed animal or without right now, right?
Well, you know, what's funny is you keep bringing up the gay thing, and I know quite a few gay men, and none of them would have a stuffed animal in their bed. Because of the whole gay thing, honestly. If they don't want someone to know they're gay, they're not going to put a stuffed animal in their bed and make people think they are.
When the war in Lebanon started a little over 2 weeks ago, there were thousands of unsuspecting Americans suddenly caught in the crossfire. Sally Farhat of Seattle was one of them. Sally planned to spend her summer in Beirut, visiting family and attending a journalism conference. But when the bombs started falling, she started looking for a way out. That way turned out to be a U.S. Navy ship bound for Cyprus that she crammed onto with 1,700 other evacuees. This morning, she is safely home and in our studio. Sally Farhat, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Was it an ordeal, the ship part, or was it comfortable?
I don't think you can be comfortable with 1,700 people squished into a ship that normally has 400.
You said that the entire surface of the ship almost all was all covered with mattresses.
Yes, I was stepped on many times.
Wow. And I want to start, though, but not on the ship, not with the rescue.
Okay.
I want to go back to you were having your vacation.
Yes.
In Beirut.
I was having the best vacation of my life. Every morning I would go for a run along the Rauche, which is this major boardwalk along the Mediterranean, and just marvel at all the gorgeous hotels and beach clubs and pretty people. And then I'd go to a Starbucks, and then I'd hang out with family and friends. We'd go to concerts and theater, and every night there was like 10 different things I could do if I wanted. And
I see. I thought you had gone to Lebanon on your vacation. I don't know. It was Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it actually is amazing how nice it
was
there.
Well, that's what I think. It's so cool that you guys are having me here, because I can tell the world, look, it's this beautiful place. I mean, tourism is the number one source of revenue for the country. So obviously, that's dead right now, and that's why the country's suffering so much economically. But if you just go online and look at pictures of the place, it's gorgeous.
So let's talk about pre-bombing Lebanon, what we wouldn't expect. Nice beaches?
Nice beaches with women in string bikinis.
Wait a minute.
I can show you pictures.
That's not what we expect. We expect them to be all covered up in the tent bikinis.
Lebanon is one of the only countries in the Middle East that has a huge Christian population. And as you know, only Muslims, and not all Muslims, cover their heads. So the women who are Christian, and even a lot of the Muslim women, dress very Western. There's a lot of designer boutiques all over the place.
And it's the biggest democracy in the Middle East, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Supposedly. And their difficulty, of course, is the Hezbollah and trying to evolve, as it were, as a democracy. So you have Starbucks?
Yes, lots of them. The one that I used to always go to had an outdoor courtyard, and no one sat inside because it's so beautiful outside among palm trees. And then you look at the Mediterranean Sea as you're drinking your coffee.
Do you have Orange Julius? I'm just going to keep going.
No, but I had takeout Hardee's burgers when I was sick of hummus.
How long was your trip going to be?
I was going to stay for at least the whole summer, because I just was taking kind of a sabbatical and doing a little work. But
you have family there.
I do. I have a ton of relatives, cousins my age, who just are the greatest.
So you had like a round trip airfare?
I did, yeah.
What do the airlines do when bombing the airport is your reason for not being able to make your
flight? They better give you a refund.
You know, that's a great question. They told me to talk to my travel agent, and she's still waffling. So I ended up coming back with the U.S. government, and so they took care of everything.
Now, initially, when the U.S. government said that they were going to... Initially, first off, there were no immediate plans to rescue anybody, but people started saying, hey, I'm helping America, and get me out of here. And after what... Believe it or not, and I think this really helped your situation, after what happened in Katrina... The government feels pretty guilty.
That's what we heard.
So,
I mean, I was one of the later people to get out, and by then everything was really smooth. I mean, I heard the first few days they were making people sign promissory notes that they were going to pay
them
all
back.
This.
Yes.
And ours, they were just like, hey, you know, get on, have fun. So it was
you
great.
Didn't have to sign anything, and they ripped up all those promissory notes too, because it wouldn't look good. Like hunting somebody down in their little backwater burg to make them pay for their rescue.
The Lebanese rescue.
It's just not that good, you know. And you got on board, you went back home. What's the Lebanon that you left? How does it differ from, you mentioned the tourism is dead. Was there a huge part of the city of Beirut is still unscathed, we've heard.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, there is this beautiful part of downtown that's just shops and restaurants that we used to go out to, and they spent billions of dollars rebuilding it after the Civil War, and it's just gorgeous. And if it gets bombed, I'll just shoot myself, because it's just so much money and beauty and memories. But now, just looking at the pictures of Lebanon now, it's just, I don't even recognize it. That beach I told you about is now gone, the one that I used to go to all the time.
The beach is gone.
The string bikini beach that I used to hang out at all the time.
String bikini beach.
UN, where are you?
Well, and now, why did they bomb the beach? Were the Hezbollah burying themselves in sand and pretending to be making sand
castles? It's in a city that's very near the Hezbollah stronghold. Just kind of where it's located.
Right. Did you experience any nervousness of bombs headed your way at any time?
Yes, but by accident, obviously, because we thought, you know, Beirut was going to be the main area they were going to be bombing, but they bombed a port called Junia, which is north of Beirut, and I happened to be at the beach nearby that day, thinking that I was at the safe beach, but as I was getting into my car, they bombed Junia, and I just hope that nobody in Seattle or anywhere else has to ever hear or experience that, because you can feel it. You can feel a bomb, and then you just see all
you
these people.
You feel the
running.
Earth shake.
Yeah.
You actually feel it.
You do,
yeah.
And it's just...
And awful. Incoming, do you hear it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. And then the main part is when it goes off, you see all the smoke, and then I heard all this shooting afterwards, and then all these people running, and I was hiding, and
I'm wondering, just as a female, when you are visiting Beirut and you're in Lebanon, how do you feel walking the streets as opposed to here in the United States?
And she doesn't wear her string bikini on the street, you should mention
that.
You're
not wearing the string
bikini. It's pretty much exactly the same. That's the thing that I think is another stereotype, is it's so westernized and normal. And it's like they call it the Paris of the Middle East. I mean, not today, obviously, because of what's happening. But
that's the Paris Hilton of the Middle East right now.
All my friends that from here that go there are surprised.
And your family, your grandparents, and everybody is still in Beirut?
Everybody. Cousins, aunts,
they
uncles.
Live there.
They live there.
They wouldn't leave.
A lot of them right now have left the actual city and are living in, like, mountain areas, like, hours away. They've had to leave their homes because they're scared or because they don't want to hear the bombing every night as they're going to sleep.
What's your sense, and I know that I'm not going to ask you about the politics of it all because of, you're not a foreign correspondent, but I would love to get your sense, just from the people you know, what they say about the bombing and the problems with it and what they would, you know, if anybody sits around the table and says, here's what needs to happen to end it. I actually think that there's ordinary families sitting around the table are very representative, sometimes more representative than the news talking heads on TV. Did you get anything from your relatives on that?
Yeah, everyone has such a different opinion. I mean, you have to also remember that there was a 15-year civil war. So to us, this sounds like a big deal, and it is. Oh my gosh, of course it is. But they're also kind of like, you know, look, we're used to like 15 years of bombings, and they all hope that a solution will come soon, but none of them really have any answers. They're all hoping that America will somehow help, and that hasn't happened. But
I'm struck when I see the news reports when reporters do talk to ordinary families sitting around. I'm struck by the similarities in that if you ask America, you know, about our politics, you'll get some people that'll say, that George Bush, he's evil.
Right.
Then you'll get some people to say, I've got a flag up here, he's the greatest, and you'll get all sorts of opinions in between. And it's hard to imagine, when we think of a whole country in a conflict, we tend to think of them as if they all think a certain way, but they have as many different opinions as we do.
Exactly, and I think one of the major points is that, like, one of my cousins, like, hasn't left her house in weeks. Her office is closed, and she has no work. And, of course, over there, you don't get unemployment. And then another one is having her regular Sex in the City DVD night tonight and having her friends over.
Sex in the City DVD night.
I love it.
This will bring peace.
This is what will help the whole Middle East. Yes, Eric.
Actually, Sally, I'm wondering about the press. What is the press like? Is it as free as over here? Do they have morning radio shows? Do they have talk radio? Do they have lots of different newspapers giving different opinions? Or is there censorship?
That's a great question. A little of both. They do have tons and tons of media, exactly like we have here. In fact, I met all these journalists at this international journalism conference that I went to. Ted Koppel was there. A lot of great American journalists were there, but they're all mostly owned by a certain political party or a certain group. And so,
unlike here, where they're all fair and balanced. Yes, go ahead.
Exactly. So there is a little censorship. I mean, there can't not be.
And do they have, so they would have a morning show, they have like a morning show.
Oh, I love
show
their morning show.
With a frickin' frack. And do they have a danger boy? Because I'd be quitting that job right now.
Their morning shows are a little bit more, how can I say this nicely? They're careful, really careful what they say in terms of, like, they don't want to offend different religious groups.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
Yeah, you don't just get a nasty letter when you offend somebody.
No, it's ticking. The letter could, yeah. Uh-huh. Sally, when you went to, when you planned a trip to Beirut on vacation, did people warn you? Did you have any idea that this was a possibility?
Yeah, my dad, actually. He reads the Middle East newspapers online every morning. And he was just like, you know, I love our country. I want you to go and have a great time. But this might not be the best year. I'm reading some stuff right now that kind of makes me feel like something might happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you came back, of course, all he did is hug you. He didn't see.
Yeah, my parents just are treating me really nice right now.
Happy to have you.
Yes, they are.
And you are thankful to the U.S. government for getting you out of there.
I am. I just I can't say thank you enough. I mean, especially how I was treated when I first landed in Philadelphia. I mean, we had these government officials, and the customs lady was like, "You look like you need a hug," and she gave me a hug, and we just felt, and even the guy who stamped my passport was like, "Welcome back to your country."
All right, and welcome back from us, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for a glimpse inside Beirut before all of this happened.
Thank you.
Sally Farhat. We have this prostate letter, and I have been avoiding it like I've avoided my prostate exam.
Well, let me. Is this something we need to talk about? Is this somebody needs some help? Because you don't want to put off. You know.
No, it's just a doctor. All right, we'll do this first. Dear folks, I've been going to my doctor for several years, and I have yet to have it, but I knew the time was coming. He's 30, by the way, which is about when you have your first prostate exam, I guess.
Well,
with me, it's I go in every week now.
It's like a lunch date?
Yeah, it's Thursday.
What's
Let's
the
go.
Special?
So he's 30. He says, I figured I should get a physical and make sure I don't have any fatal ailments. Since I recently turned 30, the doctor said, well, I'm going to be his doctor.
Well, I think it's going to be time for your prostate exam.
I wasn't super psyched about this. I've heard about it. And yes, no, it's sort of like Star Trek, where no man has gone before. But whatever. I guess that's the price us guys have to pay to make sure we don't die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. Once the doctor was doing his thing, he said something that has really bothered me ever since. Maybe he sensed my nervousness. Maybe he was just trying to lighten up the situation. But I swear to you, this is a direct quote. My doctor said, want to go catch Brokeback Mountain after this?
No, he didn't.
No.
No, he didn't. Oh.
I like this doctor.
Oh, man. How did I not? How did
now,
I
my doctor is a pretty funny guy.
Yeah.
And I joked around with him before he did it.
I can't quit you.
But still, it's been bothering me. I thought that was over the line. I even felt like I should report him.
Oh.
My question for you and your audience, has anybody's doctor ever said anything to them during a prostate exam like that?
Oh.
And should I just let it go?
Well, I don't think you can at a moment like that.
How do you respond to that?
Well, first you clinch.
Am I just being overly sensitive because he made the joke while simultaneously going where I have never been touched? Tom is 30.
Just lightening up a serious moment. I mean, I had a glove-snapping doctor once, you know, one that would put the glove on and snap it a couple times to get your attention. Something to break the ice.
Did he say anything?
No. She just gave a really evil smile and would snap the glove and not say anything except bend over. But she was also a very good doctor. I mean.
Yeah, I think it's no big deal, too. Anybody else think it's a big deal? It's funny.
It's funny.
It would be endearing to the doctor to know that he knows that this is as unpleasant as I know it is.
Yeah, he does this all day.
Well, has anyone else had a similar experience? 1-800-252-1025. 1-800-252-1025. Now, I've also had once a female doctor.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. You mean there are women who are doctors?
There are women doctors who will do this.
No.
That's the key.
They let women be doctors, yes.
Well, for our yearly, they let men be doctors for that, too. So that
right. And you, but you're used to a male gynecologist because there's not that many female gynecologists, are there?
There's quite a few, actually.
Are there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. But I guess I'm just so used to the gynecologist is
the doctor being a guy.
Traditionally a male doctor, traditionally a guy.
Right.
When the female doctor thinks, you know, like I said, I go in once a week for a prostate exam. When the female doctor...
I don't know why.
This was when my doctor
Weren't you a Bond girl?
My doctor was out sick this time. I was startled. I didn't ask for it.
Okay.
I was like, okay, so you're going to be my doctor, huh? She said, does this make you uncomfortable? I could, you know, get someone else. I said, nah, she's stupid. I'm just... Forget about it.
Fine.
It was very clinical, by the way.
Yeah.
It was just... You would think that you might, but no.
No. I wouldn't think that you might. No, I wouldn't, actually. I wouldn't think ever.
I love it when you only have to say three words and the whole sentence comes out, the whole story.
Can I ask a question before we press on for opinions?
Yeah, well, we have to pay some bills. The lines are lining up. Okay. Question. This guy's doctor made a Brokeback Mountain joke. Do you care? Has your doctor ever said anything unusual to you during the prostate exam? And do you, like me, go once a week? I had a friend who got that. And seriously, I don't go once a week. Bi-weekly.
Did I make a mistake in voting for the prostate topic and would like to withdraw my vote?
Too late.
It's too late. They're already on the phone. Yeah. You turned down a number of calls, right?
Well, we had several variations on what the guy on line 5 would like to say.
All right.
Several people called.
1-800-252-1025. Dear Flabby Letter, guy, by the way, he went in for his first prostate exam at age 30.
And I thought that's 10 years ahead of schedule.
It is?
It is. I think the rule is 40 is when you should check. 50 you should check annually. I may be wrong about that, but
it's actually supposed to be every 2 years.
Okay, 40 is the youngest I've ever heard. If your doctor is telling you at 30 that it might be time to check, and then
he makes a Brokeback Mountain joke.
I think that's strike two.
Okay. Fred.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to share with you that I go to my doctor once a year for my annual checkup. My wife actually makes the appointment and tells me like a day before that I have this checkup. So
yeah, because you don't want a lot of notice for this.
I know. The funny thing is, he does my examination. He says, okay, now we need to check your prostate. I said, what? I'm only like 45 years old. Well, the wife says that we want to check your prostate. I didn't really have a chance to get nervous about it. Just dropped trowel and he does his thing. And he does it and he says, well, I got good news for you. I said, okay. He says, your prostate's fine, and so are your tonsils. And I said, that's all good. But I said, I had my tonsils taken out when I was 10 years old.
Boom, boom. Yeah, try the ribs. So he was making a joke.
I hope he was making a joke.
I think he was.
How far do you go to check the prostate? Yeah.
Got it, Fred. Thank you.
It's just a little bedside, manner.
Yeah.
I'll bet there's lots of prostate joke-making doctors. 1-800-252-1025. Here is Mike. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good.
Yeah, I injured my back probably 15 years ago while I was active duty in the service, and it's been an ongoing battle, maybe trying to get some compensation out of it. So I went down a few months ago for a repeat visit down at the VA hospital. I won't mention which one. After about an hour and a half of examination, we talk. I explain that I've been divorced a couple years, blah, blah, blah. At the end, he examined my back and some peripheral damage that I had to some nerves. And at the end of the examination, he asked me if I'd like a rectal exam. No. Hello. It was completely unrelated to everything. I don't know where that came from. But
So you think he was just making up that you might need one of those?
Well, I had to.
Yeah, how's that pinky finger? Hey, perhaps we should check your rectum.
They're closely related, you know.
So you used to.
He's about 6'5", and I couldn't help but notice the size of, how tall.
Big sideburns. Yeah, I'm getting that.
Yeah, hands the size of a moose.
So you think.
But totally caught me by surprise. It's unrelated to everything. Maybe I shouldn't have told him I'd been divorced for a couple years, I guess.
Oh, man. He's going to check you for free?
Yeah.
After hours?
Well, I don't know. After hours. And, the door was closed, and he asked me...
Well, the door is always closed. Hold on, Mike. Mike, I think you're
reading... You might be a little paranoid
there. I think you're reading too much into it. Sometimes if you have a problem with your back, that could actually be one of the symptoms of prostate cancer. Did you know that?
Well, it was a spinal injury with some nerves.
You didn't punch him out and leave, did you?
I thought about it.
Yeah. Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, I was...
I had known my doctor for a long time, and this was my first turn 40, first exam. We happened to be talking about the Mariners, baseball, and all that. And he goes, just right out, just said, well, I'll be pitching today, you'll be catching. I fired
it's
back.
Endearing.
I said, well,
yeah.
I'm a rookie catcher, so no curve.
Here's the high tight slider.
All right, so to our letter writer, you would say no real problem.
Yeah, I think it's just a good, you know, as long as it's not the first time you ever met the doctor.
All right, thank you. And now Mike has been dreading me getting to line five. Yes.
Well, actually, it'll save me screening a lot of calls if you take care of
that. Oh, because they're all saying the same thing?
A lot of them, yeah.
Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I asked my doctor why he was putting in two fingers. He said that's in case I need a second opinion.
save your trip back to the office.
Mike has had to answer that 100 times. Oh, this was a big story last week. Few people doubt that man is destined to explore space. Rick Tomlinson spends a great deal of time promoting the concept. Here's what Rick is. He's a pretty heavy-duty guy. He's the co-founder of the Space Frontier Foundation, Mir Corporation, the people who first started tourism and commercial use of the International Space Station. He's also involved with the XPRIZE. Now that men are starting to pay to visit space, the general feeling is that men and women will soon want to book romantic trips together to make the old zero-gravity beast with two backs, I guess, you know. The many-mile-high club,
that's
as it were.
That's right.
This was a serious article, but believe it or not, the notion of sex in space was the subject of serious debate by Tomlinson and some of NASA's best people at a conference recently. It seems that sex in space, according to the experts, will be problematic. Don't expect it to work. Rick Tomlinson, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. And you? And yourself?
Oh, doing great.
And we're getting closer to ordinary people eventually getting into space?
It's going to happen very rapidly when it starts to happen. You know, we saw the XPRIZE a couple years ago, and we're kind of in a period where several of these companies, including one very interesting up in your neck of the woods, have kind of gone off into their shops now to put their rockets together. You'll start hearing a lot of news popping on this probably towards the end of this year and early next year.
And then at some point, will there be the equivalent of the biplane ride? I mean, will there be the local guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work with several of these small companies. We call them New Space to sort of contrast against the old big aerospace guys, the NASA crowd. And the New Space companies are going to be offering rides. It's probably going to start. Branson wants to charge about $200,000. I think he's not really going to get that. I think it's going to plummet to $100,000, and then competition will kick in. It'll start coming down and down.
Now, in this morning's paper, they said on Virgin, $200,000 for 5 minutes, and it sounds like they're ready for you to write the check. If you gave them $200,000 now, you could get in line, couldn't you?
You could certainly get in line, but you know, there are other competitors right up there in Washington. You know, you got Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, to build a rocket. He's just bought a big parcel of land in Texas to launch from. So Mr. Branson's going to have some competition.
When there is competition, of course, like VCRs and DVDs, the price will come down. When we get into space, what role does the government have in making rules? You know, one thing that's interesting is we have the FAA, and they seem to govern everything that that we can fly in now. But once you release yourself from the bonds of Earth, do we enter no man's land? Do we enter a place where no government or federal or global authority has any rule?
You know, wouldn't that be sweet? But no, it's not like that. It's the fact is there is a division of the FAA called the AST. And they are working very well. We had them out at our conference. They're dancing fast trying to keep up with this. This is, you know, all the rules we have in the FAA were developed over, decades. Many of them weren't even, you know, implemented until there was a disaster, and then somebody said, oh, we ought to make a rule against that, you know. They're really dancing fast on this, but they're very cooperative. They're open-minded, and they're really trying to work with the new industry that's rising.
So we can be assured that a portion of your ticket, even if it's free enterprise, will go to tax, will tax space.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Some of us are fighting for what we call zero G, zero tax to get this new thing started, you know, so that people have a chance to get it going. You have to understand, we come from, every one of the people running all these companies actually believes in this big picture thing of human race expanding, not bailing out, but expanding into space. And that's where we're a little different from, shall we say, NASA, which is sort of just doing its routine job. And the FAA, again, is on our side. If we can get NASA working with us to get onto the same page with these new companies, I think it could get really exciting really fast.
So you do believe in a Star Trekian world where eventually man explores and colonizes other planets?
Yeah, but maybe not in those tight outfits. I think it's definitely something that I believe that's what we're here to do.
To take over the whole universe.
We're kind of done this world. We're starting to beat the heck out of it a little bit. And I think getting out there, we can. Every time we move to somewhere new, new things come up, new ideas, new ways of doing things. And I think that, you know, what's the next step after democracy, and where do you go to try it?
Rick,
you know,
are people, and I hate to say this, but are people kind of bored with the idea of space travel because we've been spoiled so much by all these movies, and we think all these things are just easy to do and commonplace in other places? And
what do you mean? What things?
Well, I mean, like, if you watch a movie nowadays, you can, most people mistake movies for reality on a pretty regular basis. They think, since the communicator's in my hand, okay, Star Trek's pretty real. Since, you know, the people were putting people up on the shuttle every once in a while, travel from planet to planet's not so far off in the future. So have we got an unrealistic expectation of what space can become?
And will it be uncomfortable?
Well, yeah, of course, at first it's going to be, crowded, cramped, the little Soyuz capsules that we launched. Mr. Tito, who is the fellow that I helped get going up to the space station, it's a tiny little ball. But again, you know, we got to. The one thing Americans don't have a good sense of is history, and understanding the kind of conditions that pioneers came over here in the beginning in. And it'll be rough. It's not going to be a luxury ride all the time. Although Virgin, you know, I don't know if you're going to get the massage you get in Virgin First Class, but. You know, there are people that are working on all those issues. I think as you move along, it's going to get better and better. I will say I was just in Vegas where we had our conference, and we have been working with Bob Bigelow there, who's building that first space hotel. And it's a pretty nice place. It's the equivalent of a three-story home spread out sort of sideways, like a big, I don't know, a sausage or something like that with three floors in it. And viewing windows and that kind of thing. And he's going to charge for like a week at first about $5 million. So you're going to get a fairly elite set of customers. But I think over time, again, that cost will also come down.
I keep reading about all these different plans and all these different people that are going to put rockets up. What year, if you could predict, do you think that Consumer Reports will be giving us the best places to travel in space issue and rating the rocket airlines and stuff? When will this become such a reality that there's going to be a lot of people doing it and we can actually rate their service?
Well, that depends on two or three things. One, how well I do my job. Two,
whether we fix the sex and space
rest
problem.
Of the federal government to cooperate and rather than compete. It doesn't help these guys when they're trying to build these fleets of spaceships to have NASA pouring billions of dollars into the large aerospace competitors, in a sense. We would rather that NASA buy its ride, not a rocket. You know how they gave the airmail to the private sector airlines in the early days to get them kick-started? Now we got this big industry. But even without that, I would say, and this is exciting to me, we'll probably see the first private rocket flying to the first private facility or hotel 2015,
baby. Not far. Hey, now this, of course, you got this interview because you did this funny space and sex article. And I did read the article. And the point of the article was that don't get too excited about sex and space because there's a whole lot, you know, we think it's all me, but the gravity has a whole lot to do with things working right. And that it's going to be very, very difficult to actually have a fun time, because it'll be a whole new problem. And you even go so far as to talk about babies in space may not be safe. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to agree more with the second part of your statement than the first.
You've already worked that one out, huh?
Yeah, it's a learning curve. I think once you get up there, you know, it's all leverage, dude. It's all leverage.
And Velcro.
I think that, or somebody said it's leverage and Velcro. I don't know.
Well, you actually talked about making straps and things based out of Velcro so that you don't go flying away from each other.
Yeah, there's all kinds of, you know, nobody's done it, well, that we know of or that's telling. And, you know, I think that there are... I think the first people that try it, and somebody up there for a week is probably going to have the opportunity, by the end of the week, they're going to have advanced, you know, it's going to be a whole revolution. They're going to, you know, hopefully they'll come back and write a manual or something. I was talking to somebody, I wanted to get up there and write the Cosmos Sutra or something, you know, here's 25, you know, positions or something. I think that part of it is going to develop, and it'll turn into a beautiful, perhaps poetic kind of dance between two people. The biological side is much more problematic. There are certain things, you know, you have to understand the one constant we've had in the development of all life here on this planet and the development of reproduction, et cetera, has been gravity. And there are concerns, you know, and keep in mind, we're separating procreating, having babies, from the act or the fun or whatever of having sex.
And first part, the fun part should work.
A couple generations down the line, you might have some problems.
The fun part should work just fine, but a baby developing in the womb with no influence of gravity might come out kind of funny looking. Is that what you're saying?
Might be. Yeah. Now, there are some people who say, well, that's another step in evolution, and you might end up with different branches of humanity that can only live on the moon, who can only live on Mars, and maybe even can only live in free space. That's way down the road.
Maybe if my brain had not been constrained by the gravity of this planet, it would be three times its present size.
The dreamer.
Exactly.
Yes, Eric.
Rick, actually, when I watch science fiction movies like Star Trek or Star Wars, you see synthesized gravity. You see people literally walking on spaceships. I'm wondering, has there been any research into synthesizing gravity in space?
You know, it's very interesting. We had Dr. Jim Logan from NASA speaking on his own at the conference, who's an expert in this, and he took it all the way back around. The original idea in the 70s, in fact, my old boss, Dr. Jerry O'Neill, wrote The High Frontier, talked about large rotating habitats. You saw one, there's an old science fiction series called Babylon 5. They lived in a big rotating thing to provide gravity. In other words, you're on the inside of a wheel and your feet are pointing outward. 2001, Space Odyssey. Same thing. Dr. Clark got it completely right. So, you know, we may be headed that way, because the beauty of that is you can spin that sucker up until you get to one gravity. We have no data. And unfortunately, as ironic as it is, and I do get frustrated with our space agency, they one of the original ideas for the $100 billion space station they built was to have a spinner on there, a centrifuge, to try some of these things. And, of course, because they were spending too much money, they threw that overboard. So we don't know. But I think the rotating side of it is going to be important.
Rick, you said that the progress towards space, it depends on how you do your job. Well, you know, if you want to get something done, talk about sex. It got camcorders going, it got the internet off its feet, and now maybe space travel.
Yeah, I'm going to be selling T-shirts that say, I want to be a member of the 300 Mile High Club. You know, that'll get us going, right?
The day George Bush said, I want to go to Mars, you were there. Is that exciting for you that the president invites you to when he makes such a momentous announcement?
It was not only exciting for me, it confused the heck out of all the other establishment people in the room. Look, the guy can't spell much else, but he can spell space, and I'm a fellow Texan, and I looked in his eyes, he meant it. However, the difference between, you know, the distance between his mouth and NASA's ears is probably as big as space itself. So we got to stay on them, and we got to push, and make sure that they do the right thing. And
you think it's essential for human beings to explore Mars?
Well, it's not just explore Mars. Mars is just a planet. There's a whole bunch of dust. You know, I'm working on a book called All of the Above right now. Once you get 100 miles up, you can go anywhere, and I mean anywhere. And some people say, well, you know, we're at the end of it all right now. And I say, you know what? We're less than one grain of sand on all the beaches of the earth, and you're telling me we're at the end? you know, this is the beginning. Things start to get exciting now. And, you know, we can offer our kids a future of diminishing hope crammed into this planet, gradually tearing it apart, or we can open it up and give them unlimited vistas and
new
we can
planets.
Go outward. And that's exciting.
New
and I
planets
think that's
to pollute.
What
I love it.
Rick Tumlinson in Los Angeles. Rick, you're obviously very passionate. Thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.